Genesis 14 and 15. We see some kings in this time that we read here in Genesis 14. We read there was a king in, it says, Amraphel, king of Shinar, Ario, king of Elazar, Shedar-Lomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations. I'll be honest with you, these names in Spanish are a lot easier to say than in English. And so we see kings here, hidden kings, and they don't seem to make much sense of the story. But then we see down as we read further along and that they come to affect Abram and Lot. And then I call that the human side of Abram as he goes into war with against these people. I think is the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah. And then we come to the exciting story of Melchizedek, an introduction that I think most of us are puzzled with. I wouldn't have a good explanation of about this person, but let's read on, verse 2. That these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Adam, and Shemeber, king of Seboim, and the king of Elah, which is Zoar. All these were joined together in the vale of Sidim, which is the Salt Sea. 12 years they served Kerlaomer and Chedarloamer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. And in the 14th year came Kerlaomer and the kings that were with him and smote the Rephaims in Ashtaroth, Kernaim, and the Susims in Ham, and the Imims in Shavekiriathaim, and the Horites in their mount Seir, and to El Paran, which is by the wilderness. And they returned and came to Enmish Pad, which is Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites that dwelt in Hazazon Tamar. And there went out the king of Sodom, and the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Adma, and the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, the same as Zoar. And they joined battle with them in the vale of Sidim, with Kedorlaomer, the king of Elam, and with Tidal, king of nations, and Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Ario, king of Elazar, 4 kings with 5. And the vale of Sidim was full of slime pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there, and they that remained fled to the mountain. And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. And there came one that had escaped and told Abraham the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Esau and brother of Ner. And these were confederate with Abram. And when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. This doesn't seem too much like the words we have about Abraham that says, and Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him unto righteousness. This seems a very human side of now what we call Abram. And so that's why I call it the human side of Abram. He must have felt very strong feelings for the family. He must have loved and had a good relation with family. But this leads us to the encounter of this great priest of this place called, I'll read on, verse 16. And he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods, and the women also, and the people. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Kedorlaomer, and of the kings that were with him, at the Valley of Shaveh, which is the King's Dale. And Melchizedek, King of Salem, that's the word I wanted to say, King of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High. And he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand." And he gave him tithes of all. And the king of Sodom said unto Abram, "Give me the persons and take the goods to thyself." And Abram said to the king of Sodom, "I have lift up my hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread even to a shoelachet, and that I will not take anything that is mine, thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abram rich. Save only that which the young men have eaten, and the portion of the men which went with me, an Eshcol and Mamre, let them take their portion." He's pretty honest of Abram, that he didn't want anything to do with somebody giving him anything. He knew his lot before God, so he just wanted these other guys to have their own share. Chapter 15. After these things, the word of... Before I go any further into chapter 15, let's read Hebrews 11. Sorry about that. Hebrews chapter 7. I would like to understand the story more about this priest of the Most High. But it is the Most High title is also applied to Paul when he was in his ministry. He was called the servant of the Most High. And we can also call ourselves servants of the Most High because we serve the same God. And we may have different sets here in these modern times, but it is all the same God. And we read in Hebrews 6, verse 20. "Whether the forerunners for us entered, even Jesus made an high priest for ever after the order of Melchizedek. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham, returning from the slaughter of the kings, and blessed him." Now, Hebrews calls him Abraham, but there in Genesis we read Abram. So we can just use the name as, not as we wish, but... we can use both of them because the Bible does so. "To whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being by interpretation king of righteousness, and after that also king of Salem, which is king of peace." So these two words come in contact with us in our relation to Christ, the righteousness through Christ, and the peace we enjoy through him. So these are amazing shadows that we can enjoy now through these stories. And not only stories, because they come alive as we read them, especially when they come to face with the person of Jesus. And if something is related to Jesus, then it is related to us through the Old Testament. And it is a beautiful picture of how we apply these messages. 3, "Without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abided the priest continually. Now consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. And verily, they that are of the sons of Levi, who received the office of the priesthood, have a commandment to take tithes of the people according to the law, that is, of their brethren, though they come out of the loins of Abraham. But he whose descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham, and blessed him that he had the promises. And without all contradiction, the less is blessed of the better. And here men that die receive tithes, but there he receiveth them of whom it is witnessed that he liveth. And as I may so say, Levi also, who received tithes, paid tithes in Abraham. for he was yet in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. We have a story for us. Seems that the story there in Genesis is way too old, way too back in time, but is brought new to us through the Spirit in the lips of this Hebrew writer. Let's go back to Genesis. And we are Genesis 15, chapter verse 2. And Abram said, Lord God, what will thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house is this Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, behold, to me thou hast given no seed, and though one born in my house is mine heir. So God goes and encourages him and comforts him through this divine promise, which affects all of us. Seems that Abraham kind of forgets the experience that he had with Melchizedek, being such a strong character in the Bible. And as a man, he may have done so, but he continues on with his need. And he puts the need, his need, in the arms of God, and tells him, Lord, I have a need. What? It's like asking God, what are we going to do? Like sometimes when we talk to God that way, but not so boldly, but more humbly. For, and behold, the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, this shall not be thine heir, but he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, look now toward heaven and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted to him for righteousness. And he said unto him, I am the Lord that brought thee out of the Chaldees to give thee this land to inherit it. And he said, Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? And he said unto him, take me an heifer of 3 years old, and a she-goat of 3 years old, and a ram of 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he took unto him all these, and divided them in the midst, and laid each piece one against another, but the birds divided he not. And when the fowls came down upon the carcasses, Abraham drove them away. And when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abraham, and lo, an horror of great darkness fell upon him. And he said unto Abraham, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them for 100 years. We always wonder why God does things like this that bring us shadows or darkness or blackness or days when he's about to do something. But that's the God we serve. He can act unexpectedly or knowingly or with a promise or without it. And still, though, we know we love God because the way he shows unto ourselves, we must understand it. Not being a human being, being a spirit, being eternal, we have to understand he doesn't have our mind. He has a divine mind, and the way he conveys it and he lets us know through his mind, that's the way we have learned to understand him. Verse 14, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward they shall come out with great substance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation, they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of Amorites is not yet full. So Abraham, you're gonna have your request, but they're gonna go and become slaves, and you're gonna die. That is the lot that Abraham had to accept, even though he may not have understood everything, like we do not understand everything that God tells us about our service to him. But one thing is for sure, where God guides us, he will spare, he will protect, and he will provide, as he always did with his holy people. (clears throat) 16, but in the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. In the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites and the Kenizzites and the Kadmonites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Rephaims and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Girgashites and the Jebusites. So all these people dwell in the land of the where God was going to give it to Abraham's seed. And so we are also living, brothers and sisters, in a hard land where sometimes we have to draw people away from us because of their sinful lives. Just like Jude says about the garments, that we may not be contaminated. People living in sin, and they don't care about God. And so this tribes that they had to drive them away from the land of Canaan, it seems to us that they did not exist only that day, in a sort of speech, in a figure of speech. We can face this problem again and again, as we have to deal with these kind of people today in the world. They don't worship God. They worship idols. They worship other things, and it is given a command to us that we shall love our neighbors as ourselves. But when it comes that we may be contaminated and we might compromise, and we may put at risk our identity as Christians, then that takes on another level, of course.
Recently, I've been listening to sermons on Proverbs, and last night was sort of a break from that. The sermon was on in chapter 15. I can't get that on. And so I just wanted to share, I guess, the main points that I heard last night. I wrote down some of the passages, since it happened to be the same place in Genesis that we were in. So we look at Genesis 5 and 17, or 15 and 17. And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. So when God made covenants with people, they would cut up animals, and then a party would walk through the animals. And if I understand right, that basically symbolizes, if I don't follow through with my promise, then may I be as these animals torn apart, basically. So let's read a passage in Jeremiah 34, 34, yeah, Jeremiah 34, 17. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, ye have not hearkened unto me in proclaiming liberty, every one to his brother and every man to his neighbor. Behold, I proclaim liberty for you, saith the Lord, to the sword, to the pestilence, and to the famine. And I will make you to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth. And I will give the men that have transgressed my covenant, which have not performed the words of the covenant, which they had made before me, when they cut the calf in twain and pass between the parts thereof, the princes of Judah and the princes of Jerusalem, the eunuchs and the priests, and all the people of the land which pass between the parts of the calf, I will even give them into the land of their enemies and into the hand of them that seek their life, and their dead bodies shall be for me unto the fowls of heaven and to the beasts of the earth. And Zedekiah, king of Judah, and his princes will I give into the hand of their enemies and into the hand of them that seek their life and into the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which are gone up from you. So here we see an example where it was the people who made the covenant who walked through. And so what's amazing in Genesis 15 and 17 is that here we're not reading about Abram walking through. In this case, it seems to be a theophany being a physical representation of God that's terrifying. Another example would be Moses in the burning bush. And so here we notice two of the things we notice in verse 17 is that it was dark and there was a smoking furnace, a burning lamp. And so the burning or fire can represent God's judgment. And thinking about the example of Isaiah in Isaiah 6, there's another example where the angel takes the tongs and puts a burning coal at Isaiah's mouth. So Isaiah, let's go ahead and start at the first verse. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. So, you know, this might be a vision. It's not necessarily what would be called a theophany, but it's still, just for that fact alone, it relates to what we're reading. Above it stood the seraphims, each had six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. So he basically curses himself, saying, Woe is me, which is sort of a curse. He's intimidated, of course, because of the presence of the Lord. And then let's go ahead and go down to verse 8. Also, I heard the voice of the Lord. Well, I'm sorry. It is verse 6, I guess. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. So I think in the past I've read this verse and kind of been surprised that I sort of took it as God just cleanses him, makes and forgives him. And my understanding is everybody who's been forgiven, both Old Testament and New Testament, is forgiven by the blood of Christ. But the when I was reading it, and I think it's the New American Standard Version, it has the little things on the side that say literally what it means, and it said atoned for. And atoned for means paid for, that the sins are paid for. And so here, in a sense, I think it's pointing forward to the sacrifice of Christ on the cross. And I think also in Genesis, if we go back to Genesis 15, in this case, it isn't Abram that walks in between the dead animals. It's a representation that comes from God, and so some theologians believe that this is referring to the fact that God would put himself as the one to bear the burden of the oath. If we look at verse 4, God makes him a promise that he will have an heir. In verse 5, he has him look at the stars and shows him. And so he believes God after earlier he had sort of questioned how God would do this. And so it talks about how he's accounted counted it to him for righteousness. And then after that, in verse 8, he says, and he said, Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? So it kind of sounds like he's still questioning God, but in this case, you know, at this point we see that he's been accounted righteousness for his faith. So he does have faith in God, and it may be that he is questioning himself at this point. He's questioning whether is he going to carry through with the covenant, because which is something as humans we should do. We should question whether we will actually carry out the covenant. And since we fail and we falter and we sin, God gives him the assurance of the covenant, and then it seems that it's God's representation that passes through the pieces. We notice in verses 12 and 17 that there's darkness. I think it is 12, and 17. And the 12 is when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, an horror of great darkness fell on him. And verse 17, and it came to pass that when the sun went down, and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. So perhaps relevant to that, I'd like to read Luke 23 and 44. Luke 23, verses 44 and 45. And it was about the sixth hour, and there was a darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. And the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was rent in the midst. And then Matthew 27 has a longer account. Matthew 27 and 45. Now from the sixth hour there was a darkness over all the land unto the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Some of them that stood there, when they heard that, said, this man called Elias, and straightway One of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. The rest said, "Let be. Let us see whether Elias will come and save him." Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. So during those 3 hours, not to say that that's the only time, but during that 3 hours, Jesus was bearing the wrath of God. So I wish I had had more time to study some of that. One of the things that I would have liked to look at was the, I remember in the sermon I was listening to, the theophany wasn't described as a torch, and it was described as like lightning that sort of was on pause. I don't know if that's a difference in agreement on the translation of that passage, but I guess it's an interesting thing to study on. I think to look at how God seemed to participate in that covenant.